The Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome. We're about to take a deep dive into a book that, honestly, it really changes how you look at the world. It's Vaclav Smil's huge work, Energy and Civilization, a history.
That's right. And if you've ever wondered, you know, what really shapes human societies, their complexity, their limits, their sheer scale, well, this is the place to be.
Absolutely. Our mission today is pretty ambitious, actually. We want to fundamentally reframe how you view history itself.
Mm-hmm. Because you probably learned history through, say, politics or maybe great leaders, military stuff.
Right. The usual narrative.
But Smil argues those are just surface events. We want you to see the foundational role energy plays, how it enables or sometimes constrains everything else.
Exactly. The core idea is almost, well, simple when you grasp it. Every single major shift in human history, think farming, the Industrial Revolution, even our digital age, it's all fundamentally a story about energy.
About how we harness it, how we convert it, how much of it we can command.
This book really answers that big question. What single force-shaped civilization? And the answer is energy conversion.
So before we dig into the epic journey Smil takes us on, maybe we should talk about the author himself.
Good idea. Vaclav Smil. He's a distinguished professor emeritus, Czech-Canadian scientist, and honestly, a true polymath.
He really is. He's written over 40 books. They cover history of technology, public policy, food production, and of course, energy systems.
What makes his viewpoint so different, and I think so powerful, is that he's intensely quantitative. He works with the numbers.
Yeah, he doesn't really deal in vague theories or wishful thinking. He synthesizes physics, engineering, history, economics, all grounded in data.
When you read Smil, you have to face the hard facts of, well, thermodynamics.
He's definitely a man of numbers. And those numbers, they're not negotiable, are they?
Not at all. Which explains why he has such a dedicated following, especially among people who, you know, actually build things. Engineers, planners.
And he's famously skeptical of hype, particularly technological hype, and those oversimplified models you sometimes see.
His realism comes straight from physical reality, not ideology. I mean, when people like Bill Gates consistently recommend his work,
it tells you something about the rigor, the authority he brings. It's essential reading if you want to understand these systems.
Okay, so let's unpack his central thesis a bit more. Smil argues that energy is the single most important universal currency.
The thing that underpins and drives all of human history.
It's the essential resource. He calls it the capacity for action. It makes everything else, economics, politics, culture, possible.
And the book tracks this whole energy story chronologically, right?
Exactly. It starts way back with the earliest solar economy. Think hunter-gatherers.
Limited basically by muscle power, fueled by what they could eat, which is just recently captured sunlight, biomass.
Right. Low energy flows meant low societal complexity. Nomadic life, small groups.
Then the book moves through that critical early phase.
Yeah.
Adopting farming, domesticating animals.
And harnessing the first non-human power sources, like wind and water.
All setting the stage for the real climax of the book, the Industrial Revolution. Or what Smil calls the Great Transition.
That Great Transition is so key. It's when humanity shifted from relying on continuous solar flows, like wood growing each year or water falling,
to tapping into concentrated stocks of ancient stored solar energy, fossil fuels, coal, then oil, then gas.
Yeah. And ultimately, the book delivers this pretty sobering message. Politics, culture, economics, they don't really drive history in the deepest sense.
They're shaped by and limited by the underlying energy systems that a society has access to. That's the foundation.
So let's dive into that foundation, starting at the beginning with that low energy baseline.
Okay. Smil is relentless with the numbers here. He calculates that a forager had maybe 2,000 to 3,000 kilocalories available per day.
Which sounds like a decent amount, maybe, but it's a tight budget.
It's a very tight budget. It acted as a hard physical constraint. It meant a nomadic lifestyle, small groups.
No surplus, really. No energy left over to support, I don't know, a big bureaucracy or a standing army. Complexity was severely limited.
But then things started to change. Two key breakthroughs.
First was fire, right? Oh. The earliest use of extra somatic energy.
Right. Energy harnessed outside the body. Cooking food, for instance, made digestion easier, effectively increasing our net energy gain.
And the second, this was the really revolutionary step, the one that created the first real energy surplus.
The domestication of draft animals. oxen, horses.
This is where you see that first big leverage of energy. It's amazing when you quantify it.
An ox, Small points out, can deliver maybe 3 to 5 times the sustained power of a human. That's a huge difference.
And that difference enabled heavier plows, larger fields, a reliable food surplus.
Enough surplus to support people who didn't farm. Artisans, builders, scribes, the beginning of towns and cities.
That's such a key insight. That surplus food wasn't just food. It was stored energy that freed up human time and effort for other things.
Exactly. But okay, we can't stay on the farm forever using animal power. What's the next step up?
That brings us to pre-industrial power, moving beyond muscle to inanimate energy flows, wind and water.
And here, Smell introduces two absolutely critical concepts you need to grasp: power and power density.
Power being the rate at which energy is used.
And power density being how much power you can get from a given area or volume. Density really matters. A water wheel needs concentrated energy falling water to provide useful, sustained power.
And these weren't just minor improvements. Smell shows how vital they were for centuries. A good medieval water wheel, for example,
could deliver the sustained power equivalent to dozens of men working continuously.
That transformed industries like grain milling, making textiles, even early metallurgy.
These weren't just clever inventions. They were non-muscle power sources, multiplying productivity, slowly building the foundation for the huge leap that was coming.
Which leads us right into part three, the great transition, the move to concentrated energy stocks.
This was the quantum leap. Accessing that dense, ancient solar energy locked up in fossil fuels.
And the key concept here is purely physical. Energy density. Smell makes this crystal clear. Coal just packs way, way more energy per pound than wood or peat.
Orders of magnitude more. You simply cannot build a global industrial civilization on low-density biomass. It doesn't scale.
And the hero, or maybe the prime mover, of this transition.
James Watt's improved steam engine. It wasn't just another engine, it was truly revolutionary.
Why? Because it could convert the chemical energy in coal into powerful, reliable work.
And crucially, it was mobile. You weren't tied to a river anymore or dependent on the wind blowing. You could have power anywhere you could get coal.
The impact was just world changing.
Totally. Once coal could power a reliable engine, you get railways, steamships. Smell talks about the annihilation of distance.
And it allowed for massive cities, huge, dense populations.
Yeah.
Because before, cities were limited by how much food could be brought in from nearby farms.
Right. Now, you could efficiently import vast amounts of food and resources from thousands of miles away, all powered by coal.
Which brings us pretty much to the modern era, part four, high energy civilization and its incredible scale.
And we really have to have absorbed this scale. Fossil fuels, coal, oil, natural gas, they still provide over 80% of the world's primary energy today.
80%. That's the physical reality underpinning, well, everything. Global civilization runs on it.
And Smell makes us confront this with the concept of embodied energy.
Right. The total energy needed to make anything.
Think about a steel beam in a skyscraper. It embodies the energy to mine the iron ore, transport it, smelt it using coking coal in a super hot furnace, shape it.
Every single object you touch basically represents a huge amount of past energy consumption.
But the example he uses that's really arresting, maybe even shocking, is modern agriculture.
Yeah, this one really hit me too. The food system feeding 8 billion people, utterly dependent on natural gas.
Specifically for the Haber-Bosch process. That's how we make synthetic nitrogen fertilizers.
And maybe we should just quickly explain that. Haber-Bosch takes nitrogen from the air and combines it with hydrogen, usually from natural gas, to make ammonia.
Right. And the process needs incredibly high heat and pressure. Almost all of that energy currently comes from natural gas.
Without that fertilizer, global crop yields would crash catastrophically.
Smell doesn't mince words. He basically says modern farming is turning fossil fuels into food.
Wow. Okay, that reliance, especially for something as basic as food, leads us directly into his core themes. Theme one seems pretty clear now. Energy is the master resource.
Yeah, it's the universal currency. It's what makes all other economic activity possible. If you can't convert energy effectively, nothing happens.
Then there's theme two, the connection between energy density and societal complexity.
This is such a crucial insight. Higher density energy sources, like oil compared to wood.
They support higher complexity, they enable global trade, megatizzies,
yeah.
Things that just weren't possible with lower density fuels.
The density of the energy source available physically dictates the potential scale and complexity of the civilization built upon it.
Okay, theme three, the inexorable slowness of energy transitions. This one pushes back against a lot of current optimism, doesn't it?
It really does. Smell looks at the history, the data, and historically, these transitions take a very long time. Multi-generational affairs.
Often 50 to 100 years, he says. And crucially, new energy sources usually get added on top of old ones.
They don't replace them quickly. Coal didn't eliminate wood overnight. Oil didn't eliminate coal overnight. It's an additive process, mostly.
But hang on, what about today? Aren't we seeing things like solar power costs plummeting or EV adoption taking off really fast in some places? Does Smell account for that kind of exponential technological change?
He does acknowledge progress, but he grounds it in physics, in material reality. His point is that while information technology can advance exponentially, think Moore's Law for chips.
Energy infrastructure is different.
Exactly. It involves digging things out of the ground, processing them, building massive pipelines, power plants, transmission lines, storage systems.
That's mining, material science, construction.
Yeah.
It moves at the pace of the physical world, not the digital world.
Right. You can't just download a new energy system. Replacing 80% of global primary energy requires building an entirely new physical infrastructure on a planetary scale. That takes time. Lots of time.
Which brings us to his final big corrective, theme 4. History is constrained by physics.
Mm-hmm. He's reminding us that the laws of thermodynamics, the energy content of fuels, the properties of materials, these are non-negotiable.
They aren't political opinions.
No, and any plan, any policy, any ambition for the future that ignores these fundamental physical constraints is, well, it's fundamentally flawed from the start.
The book is just full of these kinds of powerful ideas, insights that really stick with you, make you rethink things.
Definitely. Let's highlight maybe 3 key ones. First, energy is the only universal currency. It is the capacity for action.
Meaning it's not just another commodity like wheat or steel. It's the prerequisite for action, for doing anything at all.
Exactly. The second one is kind of a reality check about where we stand today. Modern civilization is a recent and fragile construct sustained by fossil fuel consumption at rates that are orders of magnitude higher than sustained all pre-industrial societies.
That really highlights how historically unusual our current high-energy world is, and potentially how vulnerable. We've never lived like this before.
Never. And the third idea speaks directly to the challenges we face now. The transition to renewable energies will be neither fast nor automatic. It will require massive investments in new infrastructure and fundamental changes in energy use patterns.
That captures Smell's realism perfectly. Decarbonization is immensely difficult. It's not a quick software update. It's a massive, multi-decade global engineering project.
So how can we, you know, use this way of thinking in our daily lives?
Well, the first step is what you might call developing an energy intuition, shifting your perspective.
Seeing the embodied energy in things.
Exactly. Mm. See that plastic bottle not just as plastic, but as processed crude oil shaped using fossil fuel energy. See a plane flight not just as travel, but as the rapid burning of tons of kerosene.
And that leads to being a more informed citizen, right? When you hear about policy proposals, green solutions, promises of rapid transitions,
you're equipped to ask better questions. Questions grounded in Smell's analysis, like what's the actual power density here? What materials are needed? How much land does this solar farm need to replace that gas plant? What's the historical precedent for this speed of change?
It helps you cut through the hype and evaluate claims more critically.
And it also gives you a much deeper framework for understanding global geopolitics.
Oh, absolutely. You realize that controlling energy resources, oil, gas, the pipelines, the shipping lanes, it's not just about economics.
It's been the fundamental driver of geopolitical power, conflict, alliances. For the last century, at least, energy is security.
So wrapping up, what's the single most valuable lesson you took away from this?
For me, it's that rigorous application of physics to history.
Mm.
Just the sheer power of that constraint. The idea that the path of civilization is shaped, ultimately limited, by the quantity and quality of energy it can harness.
Mm.
Politics has to operate within those physical boundaries.
Yeah, that's powerful. And what surprised you the most?
Honestly, it's still that deep dependence of modern agriculture on fossil fuels. That turning fossil fuels into food concept.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that our ability to feed billions rests so heavily on natural gas.
Yeah.
The implications for global stability are just staggering when you think about it.
It really makes you see the connections, which leads us to maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to take away.
We need to start thinking about history differently, not just in terms of years and major events,
but in terms of joules and watts.
Think about history by how much energy that's the joules was consumed and how fast that energy was delivered. That's the watts to make things happen. It adds a whole new dimension. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Counter Foundation.